Glynnis Fox, a highly acclaimed cartoonist and illustrator, has made significant contributions to the field of archaeology by illustrating numerous excavations in the Eastern Mediterranean since 1998. In addition to her archaeological work, Glynnis has authored several graphic novels, including Charlotte Bronte, Before Jane Eyre, Persephone's Garden, and Rain of Crumbs. Furthermore, she has lent her artistic talents to various books such as Cinyras, the Divine Lyre, and the Homeric Hymns. Now, excitingly, in 2024, Glynnis will be publishing a graphic novel of Eric Klein's influential work, 1177 BC, the year civilization collapsed. So it really is a pleasure to have Glynnis as a guest on the show, and I'd like to warmly welcome her. So welcome, Glynnis.
Thank you so much.
So, Glynnis, can you begin by telling me a little bit about your background first? I mean, how did you get started in cartooning and illustrating?
It goes way back. I feel like I've always drawn kind of cartoon related things, cartoons, including in high school and before, like contributing to a literary publication. But then I went to art school as well as an undergrad in kind of a degree in humanities. But it was really in grad school where I started drawing cartoons that had to do with the archaeology that I was also studying at the time. I went to school in art, but that included courses in archaeology for me. That's what I chose. And so that also led to going on programs like the Americans School in Athens summer session, and then a dig in Israel, and which led to work in archaeological illustration. So I guess I've answered two questions there about cartooning and archaeological drawing.
And I read that you got a Fulbright scholarship at some point, and that ended up culminating in the publication of several works on Cyprus specifically, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. So because of working, because of a really good teacher or professor at Tufts, where I went to the museum school in Boston, and so Jody Magnus taught an Aegean archaeology class as well as led a dig in Israel that I went on. And so it was really her that encouraged me to do these things and then and also to apply for the Fulbright. So, and I chose Cyprus because it was a place in between Greece and Israel, Lebanon, where I had been. And it just looked fascinating as in where these cultures intersected or overlapped. So it was there that I wrote to a lot of different excavators beforehand, volunteering to work as an illustrator. And so that's how I began to work with different archaeologists even before the Fulbright started. And once I was there, then I met more and more excavators, and that led to different opportunities and expanded my knowledge of the place and different sites. And yeah.
So how many times have you been to Cyprus, out of curiosity?
Well, the Fulbright began in 1999, and I extended it for a half a year in order to finish the books. And the two books that I published there were a book of paintings of archaeological sites, which was my original project, with explanations by the excavators. And some of them I wrote myself. So I recruited excavators to write for this. Especially Vasos Keriorgis. He was very helpful in this whole project. But I didn't want to make these paintings absolutely straight. I wanted to sort of bring to life the sites by, for example, putting artifacts in the paintings that had been found at the sites, but then were displayed in museums, like the famous ones. And the other project I worked on while I was there was cartoons of Cyprus, and that the original book, I mean, the book of paintings was published by the Hellenic Bank, which the bank that doesn't exist anymore, sadly. And that project came into being because of Rita Severis, who I know has been a guest on the podcast, a really interesting conversation with her. And she had a vision for it because her work involves traveling painters to Cyprus, which is what I was. And so she was an editor or producer in a way of this book. I was so grateful to her. And but the Hellenic Bank wanted to produce a book that they could give to valued clients, and that did not include my funny cartoons about Cypriot archaeology, funny or totally obscure, so that I'm not sure who gets them, actually. So Ruth Kashishian at Mouflon published a separate book of my cartoons of Cyprus that Vasos Kyriorgis wrote an introduction for.
What is it about Cyprus? And this is a very personal question. What is it about Cyprus, the fact that, you are a non-Cypriot, but something about Cyprus really appeals to you? What was it about that island that kind of drew you to it in the first place? It almost seems like you keep on coming back to it in some ways.
Yeah, I hope so. I've been back a few times. Well, I think I can answer this several ways. One, that I spent a lot of time putting together my Fulbright proposal, which is what got me to Cyprus, without ever having been there, and with only reading. When I was applying, it was really before the internet was, you could find anything. So I was relying on, books about the archaeology of Cyprus, and it was so interesting. And I think that it's kind of a cliche of Cyprus to say that it's between the East and the West, but there is, because anyway, those designations are coming from a European sensibility, and Cyprus is really the center of things. So that was the initial, where could I go? Also, there were many fewer Fulbright applications to Cyprus than to Greece, Israel, or Lebanon or Turkey. So that helped my odds, which was really good. And then when I arrived, I found a community that was of a scale that really allowed me to flourish. And CARI in particular, the Cyprus American Archaeological Research Institute, which is like a place to live, a hostel and a library and a kind of cultural center that gave lectures. And that really gave it was a very safe or inviting place to someone from like me from the outside who knew really little. I was there the same year as Louise Hitchcock, so I got to be friends with her and traveled around and looked at sites with her. And lots of different scholars came through, including John at the very end of my time there was where I met him. And I think that I was also there at a very lucky time when the economy was thriving and that there was a government subsidy for publication, which allowed me to publish those two books. And because of the connectedness of CARI, I met Rita Severis, for example, and Ruth Kashishian at the Mouflon Bookshop. I remember every time I went in there, I met somebody else who was visiting or traveling through or was working on the island. And so that helped to create a sense of belonging in that place where I was a foreigner. I think also I've met through Kari and the University of Cyprus, Lena Cassinidou, who's a good friend, and through her had all kinds of opportunities by illustration work and, you know, knowing the island. Her mother runs a gallery there that helps me know local artists, which was really important to me.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit jealous. I really am, because to have those experiences, to get to see, you know, virtually the entirety of the island through the eyes of different archaeologists and different, you know, experts in these different fields, to work with artifacts. And, you know, and for everyone listening, please do check out glynisfawkes.com. And Fawkes, that's FAWKES, because obviously there's a lot of your work that's there. But then you can also see some of the archaeological illustrations that you've done. And I would imagine that you get to deal with this work a more intimate level.
Yeah.
Yeah, that opportunity just to interact with all that stuff, it's amazing. It's such a cool experience to have.
It is, and so you're not too jealous. It's also drawing artifacts also is ultimately really boring. I mean, it's not creative work. It's pretty repetitive.
And, yeah. Okay.
So by the end of the time, my time there, I was not ever fed up with Cyprus, but I was thinking I got to find a different way to make a living than drawing pottery. But I keep going back. I mean, I'm going back to work at Kankriai in Greece again, and that's. It's not a Bronze Age site, unfortunately, but I like the director, and it's a nice place to go. There is no other way to really feel like be involved with these artifacts. For me, it's given so much, but it's not unmixed.
You're an illustrator. I mean, you're a cartoonist. You're a storyteller at the same time, right?
Yes, I think that is it. It's that. Illustration is scientific,
right.
And I start getting antsy if I'm not telling more of a story than drawing a measured scientific drawing of a pot allows.
You're also an educator as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So do you run sort of independent seminars, or are you teaching at a particular school? Like how are you involved in education?
I have taught at different places, including University of Vermont and Champlain College. But for the past 4 years, I've taught at the Center for Cartoon Studies that's in White River Junction, Vermont. And I have taught summer classes that are in making comics, like an intense week. And I also teach the senior thesis seminar at CCS. So helping students or coordinating with students to produce their thesis project that is a year-long project. So it's really interesting to work with different cartoonists.
One of the big projects that you have coming up is, as I mentioned in the introduction, 1177 BC, the year civilization collapsed. It'll be a graphic novel version of Eric Klein's work. And I've read his book twice, and I've got to say it is a very accessible book. It is very, very readable. There definitely is a certain stroke of genius in turning this book into a graphic novel. It almost seems like archaeological illustrations and comics could be like a bit of an unusual combination, but it certainly works. It's fantastic. So my question, I guess, is what is it about this medium that makes it so particularly accessible to readers? And in other words, what do you think is the actual appeal of graphic novels?
Ooh, that's a big question. And because I'm so deeply into it, that it's hard to answer because I feel like it's the world that is, it's bringing a visual world to life that through for especially 1177 BC, I feel like that book is composed of stories that are very vivid. And I think that's what makes it so readable, is that it's you jump from interesting story, for example, the pharaohs and the hippos, or the returned Minoan shoes, or I don't know, the story of Hatshepsut and Thutmose III, you know, like little glimpses into pieces of history that are really all that we have that to connect to create a larger story. And so to me, when I read Eric's book, those things stood out and I thought, I can tell these stories. And especially because there's such a resource of ancient art to rely on, especially around the Egyptians. And imagining ancient people's lives in small scenes that can be told in several panels in combination with quoting ancient art or including the exact artifacts that they had was a strategy to make this world visual. And so I think that that's the power of what graphic novels or graphic history can do, is you know, reference a lot of things on different levels, and to, you know, use the design of the page as part of the storytelling. So that's what really interests me about graphic work.
And how did you and Eric get in touch? Like, how did this project get off the ground?
It was really Rob Tempio, who was the editor of Eric's, the original book. And actually, I think Rob suggested that book to Eric. And it's interesting because Eric's thesis, which I don't have in front of me anymore, was all, it's a collection of cataloging all the artifacts from other places, or foreign artifacts found around these countries of the Eastern Mediterranean. But the story of 1177 BC ties that research together in a very cohesive story. So it was Rob who I showed my my comics of the Homeric hymns to at a conference. I can't remember when exactly, but he said, "Hey, how about doing this book?" And I thought, yeah, let's see. And then when I read it, I realized I could do this. And so that was about 3 years ago. Yeah, it's taken about 2 years and a bit to draw all these pages. And whew, what a ride.
Now, this isn't the first time you've collaborated on adapting a nonfiction work. You've illustrated parts of Kanyrus, mm-hmm. the Divine Lyre. How is that experience different from this, in that, like, you're representing an entire book this time, laden with information? How was that different?
Well, I think it was far more official. I think I can't remember how many pages it's like a synopsis of John's Kanyrus book that we did for a website, I think. And I think it was so different. And also that was a few years ago. I feel like I've learned a lot more about cartooning and as in use of space and balance of information since that. And I think also knowing that I needed to tell this into the entire story of Eric's book, and I had 250 or 60 pages, whatever it is, and John's was, I don't know, 12 pages. So the scale is so much different.
Now, this I find really interesting. What the collaboration process, like, how does that work? Is there any way you can walk us through that?
Sure. It was really, I went through the whole book and created thumbnail pages, as in just pencil on paper sort of parsing out the information, how each page, you know, what would be on each page, and they're pretty scrappy. And scanned those, sent them to Rob and Eric. Eric had a few comments and then went on to the next stage of drawing them on better paper, bigger scale, still in black and white, and scanned those and sent them again to Rob and Eric. And Eric really has been very helpful in feedback, but he hasn't. It's been more of a, here's what I've done, Eric. How's this working? And he's given me pages of suggestions and corrections, but it's really coming from me, like choosing what images go where. And what I've often tried to keep Eric's wording, but I think another reason that Eric's 1177 is so it's so readable is that he will repeat things, so you know without knowing that he'll say the mid 15th century in the reign of in this dynasty, in the 18th dynasty, so you really are situated in place. And so in order to streamline the pages, I've had to take out all of his anchoring in space and instead employ images to do that. So that's been an interesting part of the process.
There's a lot of information that you have to cover in 1177. And now, having had the privilege of reading the preface to the graphic novel, I noticed that you use two characters as narrators. They're identified with the names Pel and Shesh.
Shesha,
my apologies. Yeah. And they take the reader on a journey, you know, kind of see it through their eyes. And in many ways, I think the reader identifies with Pel. What do they represent?
Yeah, I had originally drafted this and chapter one with just text boxes, and gave, you know, sent them to Eric. Eric was like, "This is great, but what if you have narrators?" And I was like, "Oh no, I'm going to have to redraw." But the more I thought about it, the more I realized he was really right, and that made me start thinking. And the characters came to me. I wanted there to be, Pel represents the Sea Peoples. He's one of the Peleset, and he has the hat. But I wanted them to be kids, so that they're kind of older kids. I don't know, 13 or 14. Pel comes from a world without written language. So which causes him to always be asking questions. And, his main question is, what happened? Why did civilization collapse? Things were going so well. But I picture him as from a family of sea peoples who arrived in Egypt. His grandfather fought in battles. Maybe his father fought in battles, but is not around anymore, meaning probably he was killed in battle. I have a long backstory for these characters that doesn't appear in the book. And so it's his question. How did this happen and why? And Shesha comes from the Egyptian word for scribe, which in the feminine form would be Sheshat, but I shortened it to Shesha because it was simpler. And I picture her as the one who's literate and knows all the languages that they have to deal with, which is absolutely a invention. I doubt these characters ever could or would really exist, but she's the one that will answer questions about what's happening in the ancient world with this sort of impossibly wide knowledge of language and events. And I imagine her as coming from the family of stone carvers that would have been working on the temple of Medinet Habu. So it was really once these characters came into this book, it sort of lit up for me, because it was not just a way of conveying information, but they sort of joke around and add another human element to the story.
You can tell that there's a tongue-in-cheek approach in the work. Is that something that comes naturally to you, just bringing humor into your work?
Yes. I feel like, I hope so. I want it to be, have the sort of sense of amusement at the same time. It's where my energy and interest gets sparked is putting jokes in this. It's not as a superficial thing, but more as like a essential element of life.
As we mentioned earlier, you've illustrated aspects of the Bronze Age before, specifically with Cyprus.
Yes.
So there's definitely a familiarity with the period for you. All the work that you've done in Cyprus must have been a really good way of kind of preparing you for all this.
I think living and working in Cyprus and you know, I've worked on other excavations, for example, at Knossos and Komos and Crete and in Kythera and two different places in Israel and in Lebanon and at Troy in Turkey, and living in the region also allowed me to travel to Egypt and Jordan and Syria. And so I feel like having spent about 4 years in that region and working on a lot of different sites gave me a sort of sense of, you know, what people's houses would look like, what a way of life might look like. All I want to do is go back there. Cyprus would be nice. But also working, you know, archaeological illustration isn't especially creative work. It's really scientific illustration. So I've drawn a lot of unremarkable, sorry, archaeologists, pot sherds, you know, exactly to scale, profile and section for publication in you know, archaeological contexts. So I feel like between the finest artifacts in museums and these sherds that without context people would throw away, it has given a sense of what it's like, or what living in the Eastern Mediterranean might have been like.
You incorporate a lot of the period art into the actual illustrations. I've seen in your work, the very famous Mycenaean warrior vase, or the Battle of the Delta relief, and you incorporate that into your art. So for the graphic novel, do you have these seminal pieces of work, of art in mind, and you know, like, all right, I'm definitely going to include this because this always pops up when we're talking about Mycenae? Or
I think Eric could correct me if I'm wrong, but it was all my ideas what to put where. Thanks to a class in an intense class in Aegean archaeology and visiting museums around the region, I feel like I'm sure I've neglected important things, but I wanted to include the work that will speak to Eric's text most clearly. I think I used that warrior vase at least 10 times, you know, different images from him, those warriors with those specific helmets appear again and again. But every time I go to a museum in if I'm lucky enough, in Cyprus or Greece, there are so much that don't appear in books or Google searches that I collect photos of just for reference for what might come next.
It's really cool. I mean, for someone who might not be familiar with the period or the artwork, you have a way of seamlessly kind of blending in the art into your artwork. And it has your mark, if I can use that expression. You can yeah. see that this is your artwork, but at the same time, it's an homage to this archaeology, this artwork from, you know, 3,000 years ago. So take it as someone who consumes graphic novels and comics. Well, at least in my youth, I did. It's definitely really cool.
Ooh, thank you. You know, one thing I think of is that I have how I draw is very different than a genre of comics that are heroic and have a lot of muscle-bound warriors in them. And I think my drawing of muscles is about the level of the warrior base, where this is not the 300. It's not the sort of dark and heroic style, but I can't help it. It's sort of how I envision.
Now we often forget that these are real people in the Bronze Age, mm-hmm. Displaced, experiencing a lot of trauma, generational trauma. I mean, I don't know if you think about these events that took place over, you know, decades. Is there one story that you found particularly compelling to illustrate?
That's a good question. And no, because there are so many stories, but there was, you know, one thing that stood out was one line in the book of, I think it was Mycenae, a middle-aged woman was found in a room with her skull bashed in from an earthquake. I just thought, that is so me. or there's one, I think it's one of the Near Eastern kings sending his daughter to Egypt, saying, you know, send me gold and I'll send you my daughter. And I have this daughter saying, oh, tacky dad. And, you know, imagine the lives of the poor princesses from the Near East sent to Egypt to be yet another one of the wives of Amenhotep III, for example. It's hard to be sympathetic for royalty, but there's another image I drew of women hanging out laundry where they're asking, how is the end of the Bronze Age going for you? And I think it must have been very different for different people. Or another scene of the that I imagine from a Linear B tablet from Pylos, where it lists women with names from the coast of Turkey, as in they probably were taken during raids around the time of the Trojan War, you know, named Lydia or Halicarnassus. I can imagine that they can't have had an easy time. So I feel like in the course of the book, these scenes are only a panel or two long because, you know, it's the really delivering the information from the book. But for me, I feel like I can spin out, you know, they just hint at the course of a whole life where it must have been not easy.
That's exactly it. When, you know, you're illustrating an event where we're dealing with sea peoples, and traditionally yes. they've been portrayed as these like marauding peoples mm-hmm. who are attacking indiscriminately. And I think it was really when I read 1177 that I realized that they were victims themselves of, yes. of this period. And, we could think of them as refugees in many ways. And, you know, that story of uprooting your family in the search of something better. I mean, I think everyone around the world can really identify with that. I mean, maybe not immediate, yes. you know, it's not an immediate connection, but I mean, isn't that the story of humanity?
Yes. And also how those people have been vilified all, you know, the sea peoples through history, oh, you know, they weren't, they were attacking, or were they just trying to find a new home? But it's interesting how, you know, like since the 19th century, they've been called sort of bandits, or not bandits, pirates, or of course they're burning everything. So it's interesting to reconsider what their interactions might have been.
Yeah, and the parallels today, you know, with the movement of people in the Mediterranean, right?
Yes, exactly.
You can't help but draw those parallels.
I wanted there to be a sense of not total realism, a constant reference to ancient art, but that I think the idea of this is a sort of symbolic, maybe stand-in for what really could have happened. It's like a hint at it or nod towards the probable level of trauma that these people experienced.
For you, given all the work that you've done throughout the years and specifically on this period, is there one thing that really stands out for you? What is the appeal of the Bronze Age and its collapse?
I think that it's the art is so beautiful. I think of Egyptian wall painting, you know, and Aegean pottery, you know, the carved ivory from Ugarit. There's a certain, I think I'm interested in the aesthetic of it, but also the interconnections are so fascinating that people on, for example, the island of Cyprus, how they communicated with Egypt or Ugarit on the Syrian coast or Mycenaeans or Minoans across the sea, or, you know, like, or trying to fend off the Hittites. It's those connections are so fascinating and how they influenced each other in their different cultures. I think those are the things that really stand out to me.
Is there something that you hope readers kind of realize when reading this book?
Yeah. Well, I think it's that both these are very specific cultures and situations that could happen at no other time, but also it really isn't that different. We're living in an extremely connected world, and we've seen pieces of this fall apart, the pandemic or that ship that got lodged sideways in the Suez Canal, stopping all trade for a while. But I think both that we are not that far from that time, but how unique that time was, both of those things. If you can hold those simultaneously, I hope so.
You've are wrapping this project up. What's sort of next on the horizon for you? Is there more work potentially being done on Cyprus, or is there any other projects unrelated to that?
Yes, I have my own graphic novel that I'm working on, and I started it actually in residence in France in Angoulême, maybe in 2018, but it's a story of a family of artists from the island of Thera before the eruption, and then after the eruption, they flee to Crete and work on the wall paintings and pottery at Knossos, and then are summoned to Egypt to work on wall paintings at the palace at Tel Daba, and they go to Cyprus, and that's all. But it's a graphic novel for, say, middle grade readers, like you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, that kind of age group. And it's going to be very packed with ancient art and textiles and architecture. And it's sort of, it's an adventure about a girl asserting her place as a painter in a world where mostly women were weaving. So that's what I'm working on. It's the fiction version of this, but before 1170, way before 1177 BC. But it's the first time I've written something this long that's fiction, and it's really difficult and it's really fun.
That's really cool. What's the inspiration for that? I mean, I can see there's obviously something there that connects you to the character, given that you are an artist yourself, but there's also a historical inspiration as well, I would imagine. You mentioned that this artist goes to Egypt. Was there at any point sort of artistic works done by Aegean painters in Egypt?
Yes, definitely. So it was all based, I don't know if, this idea has been so long in development that now I can't remember the exact origin. But but knowing that there's Aegean style paintings in Egypt just invites a story. How did those artists get there? You know, how did that happen? And that appears in chapter one of Eric's book, those paintings. But it also grew out of talking with John Franklin, my husband, who works on ancient music. So one of the characters in this graphic novel is a lyre player from Byblos, I think. That's where he's from. And so they go to Cyprus and meet the king Cinyras, who is the player of the divine lyre of John's book. So it's grown out of various conversations and intersections of ideas of what the ancient worlds, like what could have happened with characters who were traveling around the ancient Mediterranean painting and playing music. And you know, ancient bands made up of characters from, you know, probably many women from different palaces in the Near East traveled around the Mediterranean. So imagine the ancient Taylor Swift performing for thousands.
Yeah, that's a very, very cool idea. And I love that it's a graphic novel that's, you know, that you have younger audiences in mind, and that I feel very appealing. I mean, I don't know where I may have mentioned this, but I myself am a teacher, and any time where you can kind of reach out and inspire and inform and educate young minds, it appeals to me.
Me too. Yeah, yeah, me too.
Do you know when? I know it's a little early to say, because I mean, we still have to publish 1177,
yes. But
what's the timeline?
I don't know. I have a contract for this book and a publisher, but there's at least a year of work ahead for me on it. So who knows? But I would love to say 2025.
You know, and I did speak with your husband, John Franklin, mm-hmm. about the board game that's yes. something else that you were working on. He said it kind of stalled a little bit, but you've also provided illustrations for that, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Are you still working on that from the design point of view?
Well, we haven't worked on it for a while. We need some help with play testing, I think, which is definitely beyond me. But yeah, there's a large fold out board with all the countries on it, and we enlarged Cyprus so that it takes up a lot of the board, like with as it should, you know. And I think talking about it hopefully will help get this project underway.
Well, Glynis, want to thank you for your time and taking the time to, I mean, this is really exciting. Again, I am a fan of graphic novels, and I am a fan of this book, and I am a fan of all the Cypriot content that you can find in here too, because Cyprus is integral to the period. And so I'm very, very much looking forward to when the book does come out.
Thank you so much. Me too. It's supposed to come out with at the same time as Eric's After 1177.
Any plans to maybe illustrate that in the near future?
Well, I left it as I ended the book with Pell's little sister saying to Shesha, "Hey, what do you know about the Iron Age?" So I left it open. In the middle of, towards the end of finishing this 1177, I just thought, never again, I'm done. I can't stand it anymore. But now that I am done, I was like, that was so fun. So I don't know. I have at least three other books that I would like to finish before taking on anything new. So we'll see how it goes.
Again, Glynis, I am a fan. Thank you so much. And I'm really looking forward to it. I will be one of the first to buy it. Trust me on that. Oh. Thank you so much for your time. And I I'll be in touch. I hope you have a great rest of the day in Vermont.
Thank you so much for the chance to talk about this.
All right. Take care, Glynis.
You too.